were so harmonious that way. But I was pointing out that in many traditions, not just Sufism, that in a marriage, there can be a type of loneliness if your partner doesn't appreciate your own mystical journey.
I was, is it just okay to jump in?
Sure.
Yeah, I was so struck by that in that poem too. It just so touched me. But I felt that loneliness is my constant urge to merge. It's nothing bigger in my soul than the urge to merge. And it's with people and trees and nature. And really, it's with the divine and everything. Without everybody, we can't be whole. And it's that thing where we cut off, just energetically, but that profound longing to join with people and trees and nature and God. And I don't know, that all came up in your reading of that poem, which I loved. And it was so beautiful. I mean, Ibrahim, that, the places... My journey overlapped with yours in a way. Tepet Slan and Rashad Field sending me on a journey.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, specifically. And then it was interesting. I'd never realized just until this moment that specifically the Whirling Dervishes were Mehdlavi. And I saw them 5 times in Cairo. And I would go every Wednesday. They would perform at a palace from 1100. Uh-huh. And I was even alone in Cairo for a while and would go to see them. And just the profundity of the silence and the stillness and the completeness in watching them was deeply moving to me, deeply moving. And I, like you, have explored really deeply six spiritual paths. And for me, from the bottom of the mountain, there's all these religions and science that look different. And as you go up the mountain, they just the same point of oneness. And I'm feeling that in the Rumi poetry and in the beauty you've brought.
Beautiful. Well said. Thank you very much, Sundar. Yes, I think another deep interpretation of these verses of the reed flute is that the reed flute is expressing the deepest yearning within each of our souls. The urge to merge. Rumi would describe it as returning to one's roots, to one's home, to one's origin. And the meaning is that this yearning, which is misunderstood by most listeners of the reed flute music, if they heard what the real message is, they would hear it as the yearning of their own soul to return to the source. And that this is the type of mystical loneliness or melancholy that's expressed in our Rumi tradition. Mm-hmm. It's that at the heart of each of our desires is the desire to return to the homeland of love, the reed field where the reed of sugar cane was cut from its source and turned into a musical instrument that in turn expresses the yearning of the human soul, represented by the plaintive melancholy notes of the wave. alien, the Turkish reed flute. I played the Turkish reed flute for a number of years. And I was a whirling dervish on and off for 30 years. So I deeply love the whirling prayer ritual. And the words that are sung are incomprehensible to the singers and the audience, but they're actually verses from Rumi's Persian words. But they're sung in a very thick Turkish accent, so even Iranians don't hear their own language being sung during the whirling prayer ceremony. But I've researched them and put them on my, translated the verses in my website, the verses that are sung in the whirling prayer ceremony music.
Just one more question, Bill, Ibrahim. My daughter was given the name Rabia by Rumai. And so I'm curious, since you brought her energy in, who she is and where she fits in the tradition, or anything about her I'd be curious about.
Well, the name Rabia just means the fourth child. There's nothing special in the name, but she was in Baghdad during the same time as some very famous Sufis, like Junaid of Baghdad, who was a very famous Sufi teacher. And she was friends with some of these great early mystics, Arabic-speaking mystics in Baghdad. Because Sufism developed first in the Arabic language and spread to Persian and Turkish and so on. So that's the story of the origin of the divine love mysticism that Rumi is. Not the sole representative, but in a line of many before him.
Ibrahim, could you return to your experience as you are there in Konya with the tomb of Rumi? You did a brief description referring to the tentacles from your heart to the tomb as a palpable experience. Could you go
a little bit? That's a visualization exercise.
It's a visualization.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you speak about your experience there a little bit more?
Yes, I will try. I just tune in. I actually feel welcomed. It's more than just Rumi's tomb. It's a mausoleum of his sheikhs, his father, his wives, his disciples, their disciples, and it's this huge, beautiful mausoleum, which his tomb is certainly the most significant. But his son is buried next to him, and I stand there and I lean against the wall and towards the people are passing in front of me, and yet I'm able to sense a holy presence that feels miraculous. It's like I close my eyes and there's this extraordinary, powerful, beautiful, holy presence, and I tune into it, and there's a connection. And there's another place in the Wild Mausoleum up front, a corner where I could stand and not be jostled by the passing crowd. There's a crowd is passing, they're all taking photographs and selfies, and there are museum guards that are ushering, urging the crowd to move so more of the oncoming crowd can come into the space. And I'm just in two corner areas tuning into the Holy Presence while the crowd surges past. And I just feel a very tranquil joy inside of myself, and my face changes, and people approach me, and I determine if they're Turkish, or they speak Turkish or Persian or English, and we greet each other, and it's like lovers of Rumi connecting heart to heart. And at these special times of the year, many people who love or Rumi lovers come to his mausoleum, and so there are people walking, going into restaurants, walking down the sidewalk on the museum grounds, and their hearts are open because they feel deeply something special about being in the vicinity of Rumi's tomb. And I don't feel ecstatic, but I feel a very tranquil joy. And I love connecting with the lovers of Rumi.
You know, this is so interesting, Ingram, because the one passage that I was kind of given from the group, one of our members of the Sangha, and the passage was, what you are seeking seeks you. And it has given me such a feeling of, this thing is reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if the tentacles, as I sit here, my tentacles can go to that site, to the mausoleum. And I almost feel that it doesn't matter where on this planet you are, but the tentacles can go to that place. I mean, I'm sure the closer you are, the better it is. But I can almost feel that what I seek is seeking me. And it's been such a blessing. I really want to thank you for coming, because you really kind of brought this closer to me. And I really thank you.
You're welcome. I will send Aubrey a quatrain that expresses exactly those words.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Wow.
What you are seeking, seek you.
This is coming in.
You, I see that you have received the seeking. It's almost like it's reached out and touched you. And I can feel that. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. I think that your message is one that really needs to be yelled from the top of the mountain.
Thank you very much. I noticed that after the first trip that Cher and I made to Laconia in 1977, I noticed when I came back home that I was looking at a photograph of a postcard of Rumi's tomb, I felt the connection.
I can imagine that. I really can.
And I've had some Sufi friends that came to my private library, my office where I had my Rumi books, and they said that they felt the presence, Rumi's presence.
You know, the other aspect that I wanted to ask you about was the whirling dervish and why this seems to be pertinent and brings you into this space. Is it because we're in a constantly moving, changing universe that the whirling dervish actually just is part of that essence, that the moving, the change, it brings you into the very essence of the universe? Because it's all changing every second.
Well, I personally would not make that kind of interpretation, which is very, to me, westernized, because the whirling symbolism is very Islamic and has to do with Muslim pilgrims walking in a circle around the Kaaba in Mecca.
And, the Kaaba? Okay. Is that like a stupa here?
Like the Kaaba, this square monument at the central mosque in Mecca, Arabia.
Okay. Where
pilgrims are walking around, and so the Sufi mystics interpret that in a mystical sentence, spinning around, circumambulating around the Kaaba of the heart.
Okay.
So it's going in that direction, not in the direction of a more westernized interpretation of orbits and planets and that sort of thing.
Okay. And as the circling of the heart, do you feel a lifting up in that sense?
Well, over the years, I experienced many altered states from the whirling prayer ceremony, but it is a prayer that the whirling dervishes are praying Allah, Allah, with each step.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I get a sense, Ibrahim, when you speak of Rumi and read his poetry, that there was like he wasn't educated. He was like the children before they're educated in religion, just pure heart and spontaneously coming from that pure heart. So I don't actually know much about Rumi. Was he educated or not?
Oh, he was highly educated. Yeah. So that he, when he met his, well, he had two mystic teachers, and the second is the most famous, named Shamsi Tabrizi, who encouraged him to whirl and go beyond book learning, go beyond bookish Sufism to experiential Sufism. And that's how Rumi became an ecstatic mystic, from being a very learned mystic.
Beautiful.
So I guess we're reaching the end of our time together. I'm glad to share what I did. And if any of you have the opportunity to go to Konya, I'd be glad to advise you on how to get the best from it.
Well, thank you so very much for coming and giving so openly your own experience, your years of devotion, and the ecstatic return that is coming to you, and for helping us to understand more about the history of the Sufism and the meaning of Konya.
Yeah.
And to be able to be in the presence of this living experience that you're sharing. It's the presence of the divine energy that touches everybody. And I know that it's touched the people that are on the line. So I really thank you, Ibrahim. And thank
you're
you, everybody.
Welcome.
Hold all this in your heart.
Thank you.
Tom, nice to see you, Tom. And Sundari, wonderful to see you again.
Great seeing you.
Thank you, everybody. I know
and
that this Kalia. Has been very
thank
special.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a
thank
blessed
you,
day.
You.
Blessed life. Goodbye to everybody for now.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.